Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, a podcast about all things education, presented by Tom Breeze. Tackling racism in education with Every Future Foundation. Hello and welcome back to Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, where I'm podcasting solo in the studio today, possibly for the first time in a while. So even more relieved than usual to have two guests, both of whom are joining me down the line. We've got Sarah Gatwood and Donald Butcher from Every Future Foundation. And before we kind of get going with the main discussion, and I don't mind who goes first on this, would you like to tell me a little bit about who you are and what your roles are within Every Future Foundation?
Ladies first.
I'll let you go ahead, Donald.
Okay. So my name is Donald Butcher, and thank you for having us, Tom. And you're doing fine solo. You're doing fine. I am the interim CEO at Every Future Foundation. My background, I've worked for a number of different charities over the last few years. I came from the fintech sector, and after a huge life event, which is I nearly died back in 2021, twice. I was in a coma, and with COVID and cerebral malaria. That's a whole other podcast of how it came about. And I had this huge life changing moment that brought me to a space of I need to be doing more, because when it's all said and done, all we leave behind is the impact that we had on people. And that's where my kind of real drive to go and start looking at how can we, you know, I was very community focused and working on a load of social impact initiatives, but they were the sidekick. Now it's become the main thing, right? I've got six kids, and it's what world am I leaving behind for my six kids? What world am I leaving behind for those that will come after me? And how am I enabling them to have agency to create a better world? And that's where I got to. And I've been at the foundation since June, July, and I'm loving it. And the impact, the joy, the teachers we speak to, the aha moment for a lot of people, that's always a brilliant thing to see, and the change in society that we get to make, right? And I have this saying, it's all about ripples to waves. If we can change one person, they will change someone else, they may change someone else. So, or if we can help educate and open the eyes of one person, that helps a number of different people. So I'll stop rattling on and I'll let Sarah go.
And Sarah, there is no pressure to try and top two near-death experiences, just to
I know, that's what I'm thinking. Big boots to fill. I'm Sarah Gatwood. I am currently a student at London College of Fashion studying PR, and I'm working with Every Future Foundation as PR and marketing assistant, as well as an assistant for one of our youth programs, Activism Academy, where we get a group of students and teach them to become activists. And I met Every Future Foundation when I was a student in sixth form, actually. And the impact that it had on me was so immense. They entered at a time when I was going through a lot of racism and in a place where I struggled with my identity. And going into my second year of uni, when I had the opportunity to do an internship, Every Future Foundation was one of the places that I thought I have to at least ask, and was very thankful to come back in touch with the founder who I met when I was in school and got this amazing opportunity.
Well, that sounds great. I mean, speaking from over here in Wales, I mean, we have a commitment here in Wales towards what they refer to as an anti-racist Wales. I mean, it's a very big commitment in a very small number of words, obviously, by 2030. So there's very much a sort of policy landscape here where there's a strong drive to work towards that. But you're coming to us from over in England. What's the situation over in England in terms of that kind of policy around moving towards an anti-racist country. Where does Every Future Foundation kind of fit into the landscape?
So I think Every Future Foundation, if we take it back to the beginning, it was set up at a time in 2021, right? And it was born out of a very, very, very simple belief that we want a fairer society and it must start with the education system. And our vision has always been to create an education system free from institutional racism, with the mission within that in how we do that is to equip the teachers, equip the students and the leaders to identify, understand, challenge, but also build an inclusive and representative school culture. Now, let's have that as the context, right, in England. And let's look at what, you know, Anti-Racist Wales Action Plan, because the reality is in England, there is no equivalent to that national framework that you have, right? Because anti-racism is voluntary and it's left in England to individual schools and organizations to come up with their own policies and their own way of doing it. So in England, we have, you know, you probably would have seen it in the news, the race riots that we had. You've seen the campaigning and the looting and the attack of asylum seekers under the guise of the immigration policy, to try and get them out. And the government have come up with this one in, one out policy, right? And I'm constantly looking at it and thinking, immigration and how people move around the world forms part of how any society is created, right? And the diversity within that society. So England at the moment, what we are really seeing is a moment in time where there is no national framework to be able to end anti-racism. Schools are left, especially in the education sector, schools are left to devise their own safeguard, you know, to fit in racism within a safeguarding policy, which a lot of schools in England struggle to do. They don't see that as a safeguarding issue. They see it as a bullying issue. A lot of the schools we go into, they will chalk it up to a bullying issue. But there's a lot of depth of that happens when racism occurs to any one young person, an individual, or is perpetuated by other students, right? So when we look at that and we look at how Wales and the commitment from the Welsh government to actually look at the anti-racism plan and to have it in place, an anti-racist Wales in 2030, it gives me a lot of confidence that, one, hopefully England will look across and go, well, can we do something similar to that? But two, that Every Future Foundation is working to fill that policy gap. And how we're doing that is we're advocating for anti-racism to be mandatory in teacher training, right? Because at the moment it's not. So you then have a teacher that goes into a school. If it's a really diverse school, they have to work or to try and understand, you know, what are the different communities that are coming within that space. The same institutional tropes are put on the attainment level for pupils within the Black community, within the Islam community, within the Jewish community. Kind of drops off, you know, because racism affects the attainment level of that. We then want to develop a national benchmark for anti-racist education modeled on what Wales is attempting, right? And how we want to do that is by looking at first things first is reporting racism in schools as a particular incident, as a very stand alone incident, because a lot of the time it's chalked up in, like I said, in anti-bullying, in discrimination, without really calling it out for what it is. This work here is super urgent, right? Because on the daily basis, Tom, I can't tell you how many students, how many teachers, how many schools reach out to us purely because a racist incident has happened. They don't know how to deal with it. The head teacher wants to deal with it. And to give you an example and to make that come to life a little bit, a harrowing story of a young man, 11 years old, falls over at school and his as he falls over, as a black boy, he falls over, his skin gets scraped, and his skin is white underneath. Right, the once you scrape off the skin, you can see is the kind of that new layer of skin, right? That wound. Now his friends see this, and they then go on a mission to try and make the rest of his skin white. So without being too graphic, you can then imagine what goes on, right? Now that there is a lack of understanding, a lack of education, but also a freedom for those students to think that they can do that to someone else, right? And this is where the education and having a plan to change the policy, it's not a for the future thing. It needs to happen now.
Yeah, that is genuinely a very harrowing story. I mean, I'm interested in drawing the comparison a little bit, because we've been talking about the England-Wales comparison, and I suppose the other thing that's interesting, I guess, is that the bulk of your work is done in London, which is obviously a much more diverse environment than the vast majority of this country. I mean, I'm speaking from the middle of Cardiff, which is a bit of an outlier, I think, in Wales, being a pretty diverse environment, being the capital city, obviously the history of Tiger Bay and all that, but the rest of Wales is far less diverse than, for example, London. And I'm interested to know, and I don't know, Sarah, maybe you'll have some thoughts on this, having been in the education system and experienced, as you said, some real kind of issues around racism. Whether we're looking at different issues, different problems, maybe different educational approaches and solutions, if you're looking, for example, at a part of the world where the pupils or their families may see very few non-white faces around, compared with an area where perhaps they are in the middle of a very diverse area.
I mean, I grew up all across the UK, but always in areas where it's majority white people. I grew up in Cumbria and then moved to the Highlands of Scotland, and spent the last 7 years of my schooling at private schools, which are historically elitist and favour those from white families. And I think that does speak to the issue of having a diverse environment around you and understanding that these people exist in the everyday. But I grew up mixed race. So I have a white father and a black African mother. And so this idea of intertwining with different cultures, different ethnicities, was always so simple to me. It always just seemed like, why wouldn't you? And I guess going into schools and realizing that many people see that we should be separated, or we have different cultures, so we shouldn't be intertwining, or we should be seen as less than others. That was such a odd feeling for me. And whenever I went through racist incidences or experienced it from either towards myself or towards others, I became very standoffish, and I was always looking to explain my ethnicity, my experiences, and try and educate them, because I always was under the understanding that they don't know what it's like, so I can just tell them, they'll understand, they'll be willing to learn. And after going through that, a lot of the time, it would make the situation much worse for me, because I became a target. I was open to having those conversations, and they'd turn into arguments, and people would be looking for that. They'd be looking to rage bait, to start an argument, to have a reason to say these outlandish ideas, and for it just to be passed and for somebody to accept it. And I think that looking through this, education really is an issue when we're looking in schools particularly, because they grow up around people that look like them, and they don't understand the other side. But that is no excuse. That is no reason to dismiss others and not be open to learning. I was always so happy to learn about other cultures. I mean, I went to a private school. I had so many students from overseas, and I would love learning about their cultures and their families. And I think that should be universal, whether you're in an area where there's one Black person in the community, which I grew up in, or whether you're in London and the majority of the people are Black or of other ethnicities. It's, England has always been a place where it's a cultural mixing pot. And I think it's so important to embrace that.
I think to jump on that as well, Tom, I think what we have to also remember is, whilst England and London specifically is seen as a diverse pot, we also have to understand there are challenges within London in itself, right? In the sense that there are less diverse areas in London where, you know, racism is perceived as irrelevant because it doesn't happen there. And what transpires in those places is what transpired in the other parts of the world. And I think, you know, comparing it, like you said, to Wales, where, you know, the diversity is rich, diversity, and what we forget a lot of the time is diversity has a beauty of advancing humanity, right? And that's how we get to where we need to get to. Our approach of Every Future Foundation is always to focus on, you know, the urban areas within London that have that diversity. We focus on the systemic biases, we focus on the student voice, we focus on the representation. Whereas in less diverse areas such as Ealing, you know, Sutton, Richmond, we focus on awareness, language, and we give the educators the confidence to be able to address it, to be able to see it. You know, being anti-racist is not a London issue, but for us it's about equipping every single teacher to see their own scene. That's what we want to make sure that we're focusing on, rather than, you know, it's easy to coin it into it's a London-centric issue, right? Because it's very diverse in this part of the world, so it doesn't happen here. But actually, a lot of the schools we deliver to, you'd be so surprised. And they present themselves in so many different faces. But if we focus on the education of educators, the education of the C-suite within schools, and the education of the pupils, you know, and I think there's a part that we're missing, which is the education of the parents, because a lot of the time it doesn't come from anywhere, right? It doesn't come from just TV, it comes from what's reinforced at home. And I'm always, as a parent myself, being very conscious as to what language are you using at home? What are you, because your children will copy.
Absolutely. I'm probably going to ask a question now that betrays my kind of, the fact that I'm a secondary teacher. I always say I put my secondary hat on at this point, because as secondary teachers, we're all subject specialists, or we tend to be subject specialists. And one of the issues that's come up here when we've talked about the vital importance of embedding anti-racist messages into education, decolonizing the curriculum is another kind of phrase that we use a lot. There's this sort of balance between the big overarching message, which is sort of embedded in the whole curriculum of anti-racism, and then you get into the sort of geeky nuts and bolts of subject, where if you're not careful, you can have a contradiction between the big overarching message and the stuff that's still there under the surface in subjects. And I know the example I always give is that music teachers tend to be Western classically trained, which is a very white dominated kind of field of music. They may be very keen to widen their own horizons, but they're not quite sure where to go with that. Language teachers, for example, we've had my colleague from languages talking about the fact that listening exams and speaking exams tend to privilege the white Parisians speaking of French rather than all of the other places in the world where French is spoken. And so the stumbling point can be, yes, I'm on board with the big message, but as soon as I get into the weeds, I'm stuck because I need this specialist help. And then people can think, oh gosh, you know, I'm going to get this wrong, so I'm just going to back off from the geeky weeds. What's your message about the balance there between the big message and the small message, the sort of nuts and bolts message. And what is your advice to teachers that are desperate for that subject specific support?
Yeah, we hear that all the time, Tom. So I don't want teachers to feel like they're alone in that journey, first and foremost, because we hear that all the time. And my first message to anyone, and I think it's, yes, to specifically teachers, but to anyone, it's a reminder that the journey of learning is not perfection, right? It's that we, you know, it is almost that old adage of the fear of starting, and the fear of starting that journey can hamper you from the fear of actually getting it right. Right? What we have to try and do, and what my advice to teachers is, avoid the Bolton approach. Avoid the, this is a separate thing. How do I embed it, right? We run a Champions for Change program, which runs every year, and is all about, throughout the year, embedding practice across leadership, curriculum, and community. So embedding your anti-racism meaningfully across your practice, across your leadership, across your curriculum, and across the community. So when you know, you mentioned some subject terms here, and earlier on, I had to find it. I put down some ideas. Oh, here it is. I put down some ideas. So languages, for example, discuss within, when you're talking about French, talk about the colonial spread of French or Spanish, right? Embed that within that conversation. When you're talking about music or art, explore the roots of Afro-diasporic creativity instead of the vague world of music, right? A lot of music comes from, you know, that whole Afro-diasporic idea of, you know, you think of Miles Davis, you think of the classically trained. There are some very amazing ethnic, classical artists, right? Music lovers. The art, when you look at the art, it's beautiful, those statues. And when we're talking about history, rather than center the empire, let's center migration. Resistance is an integral thing, but not just optional, right? Is when we start talking and making those real stories that happen in history, music, and languages, and geography, in science. You know, one of the fun facts that my kids love telling me is that the woman that invented the contact lens is a black woman. How did she come up with it? How often is that spoken about, right? The kids love telling me that. And I'm like, well, brilliant. Okay, what does that mean for that particular field of science? How does that make my daughter or my kids see themselves as being part of that journey, right? And in a way, it leads on to make the student become co-teachers. And I think often enough, teachers, and I appreciate, right, and I've seen teachers, and I can only bow to the work you guys do, because we homeschooled for about 11 years. So I know how difficult it is to make sure that you're covering all the bases, you're covering the curriculum, but you're also making sure that the kids are bought in into what you're covering. But make it, if they become co-teachers, then it becomes an easier place to you to use their lived experience to embed that into your own lessons, into supporting their learning. And I think that, for me, is the message I want many teachers to take. It's not getting it wrong can remind them of the silence, of how silence can do more harm than mistakes. Right? Because if you get it wrong by trying and starting and doing, it's a better place than remaining in silence and not doing anything at all.
We live in a kind of interesting moment in history, or certainly it feels like it. It sort of felt, looking back, like maybe during the pandemic, anti-racism almost had a bit of a moment. You know, you had Black Lives Matter, you had, you just sort of felt, I don't know, maybe rightly, maybe wrongly, that the sort of progressive anti-racist kind of movement was getting a bit of a moment. And now it feels maybe like things have turned back in a different direction. People often talk about the election of Donald Trump, for example, although, of course, he had quite a strong voter base amongst black men and Hispanic men in particular in America. We've got the rise of reform here in the UK. It's interesting. We're recording this as the Caerphilly Senedd by-election result has been announced here. Reform were odds on to win with the bookmakers, but have actually come quite a distant second here to Plaid Cymru. And we know the opinion polls are suggesting that reform, with its very strongly anti-immigration message, is quite dominant in the political discourse over in England, to the extent that maybe the Conservative Party is trying to adopt some of those messages. But what are things looking like on the ground? Because I'm always sort of very wary of buying into these media narratives that everything's sort of moved in a very different direction. You two are actually on the ground in schools, speaking to kids, speaking to families and teachers. Do you get the sense that things are moving in that direction to the extent that the media seem to be saying they are?
Sarah, do you want to take it first?
Yeah, I think, well, I spend a lot of time on social media on our account, and I have definitely noticed, I mean, a lot of the accounts we follow are other anti-racist organisations, and I've had many days where I've sat there and teared up over the things that I've been reading, especially around these riots and especially the Tommy Robinson. I remember after reading through all of those posts and comments thinking, this is the world that I live in and I need to accept that, and I need to realize that there is an issue for me to be able to do the work to fix it. But I wouldn't say that anti-racism is going backwards in a sense. I'd say that the racist narratives are just becoming more prevalent. The people are still out there that are fighting for the cause, and I don't think we should give up anytime soon and to say that the fight is getting harder. But I think it's just tapping into the right people, finding the right audience, and I think we definitely do that with our workshops, whether it is through the students or through the educators, especially from an activism academy standpoint. Our program brings up so many ideas of anti-racist projects that can be happening to make a difference in the students' communities themselves. And these ideas are incredible. And some of the winning projects that we saw from the last cohort were so impactful, and the work that they've done already is so incredible. There's been events that have been held in schools. There have been campaigns. There's been workshops, talks that the students have been creating themselves. And I think looking at the younger generation is so impactful. And I, as a younger person, would say that we are leading the fight and bringing it into relevance more, especially in the media. And that's the way forward, in my point of view.
I completely couldn't agree more. I would like to say I, as a younger person, but I don't think I qualify as a younger person anymore. But I think you're right, Tom. You know, globally, we witnessed the backlash to racial justice, you know, whether it was started in the US, but I think it was quietly here in the UK. And now it feels like it's more emboldened and it's got its wings and it's got people are more overtly racist as opposed to covertly racist, right? And you look at, like I said earlier, the hard rhetoric on immigration, that's not helped by our policymakers who are constantly using the language that will incite violence, that will incite racism, right? And like you said, you know, when schools become the battleground for culture wars, when you start really thinking about it, you put, you know, a young man from, you know, from the UK who's born here, has lived here, who comes but then looks a slightly different, you know, shade to someone that is considered traditionally British, it's a culture war. But they've both had the same upbringing in the UK. So where does he find his place? And I think it's always our response has always been to stay rooted in education, not ideologies. Teach critical thinking. I think that's what we're missing a lot of in education. It's that the idea to be able to question and to have healthy debates, right? And I would always welcome a healthy debate. You know, the arts. I remember when growing up, and probably like you, Tom, when we used to, you know, teachers will set questions and have half of you on this side, half of you on this side, and then debate, right? And you would go against, and you would learn the art of debating. But at the end of it, it's to advance, because it's healthy. Debates are part of human nature to be able to grow. And we've got to ground conversations in evidence, empathy, and a lived reality, because we've lost that empathetic idea that, actually, what if I'm on that side, right? We don't think in that sense anymore. Someone's lived reality becomes a story that is told by someone else, rather than actually, could this be true for them? And we've got to remind teachers and students that justice is not about politics. It really isn't. Justice is about, it's about humanity. It's about how do we look at each other as human beings and grow together, and also be, at the end of the day, everyone wants to live in this society that's harmonious. No one wants to live in a place that is, there's constantly this going on, there's constantly that going on, and have a fear. We hear that from students. So I'll give you, again, another lived, not necessarily my lived experience, but for students who don't want to go to school, who didn't want to go to school after the race riots happened, because they felt that they weren't safe in going to school. Now, can you imagine a 9-year-old, a 10-year-old, 11-year-old, 15-year-old, that all of a sudden the joy from one day to the next is sucked out? They don't want to go out. They've got a whole summer ahead of them, but they have a fear of going out, because if they go out, they will get, they may not make it home. That is the reality for a lot of these students. And I think as people in positions where we can help educate, we have to almost be, again, willing to learn from their lived experience, willing to understand and to have that empathy with them. And together we can kind of make this journey a much easier place to live, right? And, you know, everything is cyclical. As you know, Tom, everything's cyclical. Donald Trump has got a few years, and he will go out, and there'll be someone else that will come in and will have their own methodology. You know, Bush, his whole thing was war. Trump, his whole thing is, you know, we've had this, right? And you can go back to Cameron, they've all got Tony Blair, if you want, then you've got, you know, Gordon Brown. Everyone has their, it's all cyclical, it all changes. But I think, you know, in talking about education, we've got to stay rooted to, as teachers, have a responsibility to make sure that those we're educating are going out into a world to create a better, more harmonious, equitable society. And school is that first place outside of the family where an individual has an interaction with society.
And thinking about that point you made about young people maybe not feeling safe to go into school after those race riots, the aspiration that they will feel that they're in a kind of equitable space when they go into school. We often talk about a recruitment crisis to the teaching profession. And again, maybe I'm putting my secondary hat on again, because it's particularly acute in secondary, a recruitment crisis. But behind that recruitment crisis is something of a representation crisis, you know, where a lot of kids are not seeing teachers who look like them. And, you know, there's all kinds of ways in which those teachers perhaps don't look like them or don't kind of feel like one of them. That doesn't instinctively feel like a great thing, I suppose. And what do you think might be a potential way of getting to grips with that representation issue that the pupils might be seeing?
I think we would love to get more, you know, representation in so many different facets, right? When you talk about, we want to get more male teachers, you look at schools, and we need to get in, certainly in the primary sector, we, you know, there needs to be a drive for more male teachers. There needs to be a drive for more, you know. So yourself, Tom, you need to, we need to do more.
Yes.
In that sense. But when we're talking about the representation in terms of race, I think, you know, the government have just announced that they're going to push a huge, there's going to be a huge recruitment drive to get, I think, a few thousand teachers into schools. And we've just written a letter, you know, to support the government, signed by a number of different organizations that we haven't written it. The Black Equity Organization have written it. Brilliant organization. And we've signed it to be able to support the government to get in diverse teachers, to get in teachers that represent the students, the society that we live in. And I think a lot of that goes back to that institutional piece, right? A lot of people say institutional racism doesn't exist, but when you really think about it, is what has hampered those teachers getting into education? Often enough, there is a huge percentage, 40% plus of students in schools, certainly in London, are from an ethnic background, right? A diverse background. So if you place that, you know, how many do you think go on to further education, go on to then go into doing, you know, their PhD and so on and so on and so on, and then want to be teachers, right? I myself, I've got about 5 friends who are teachers who every day are going through the hardest thing from a race perspective within the schools themselves, right? They have partners who are also going through the same thing because the school system doesn't really understand them because of this whole institutional piece. It's really got to change. And the way we change it is we start internally and try and focus on it. For us, it's about giving the teachers the confidence to, one, be able to address it, to be able to face racism, to go on that journey of learning, right? And once they've done that, they will then embolden. We all have that one teacher in school that really was the ride and die teacher, right? He was that teacher that you thought, you know what, even if I was in trouble and I did everything wrong, that teacher would stand up for me. And he's the reason why I kept going to school. Because now, if we have more of those teachers that are giving the pupils, are giving those that they're educating, their colleagues, the opportunity and being more and understanding in that, then what should happen is should net out in more diverse teachers, more people coming into the education sector. Because like I said, young people, those that we're educating, those that are in the education system, they are kids who also do by what they see rather than what they hear.
And Sarah, I mean, you've talked about experiencing a wide range of kind of educational context as you were growing up. Was there an impact if you looked at that body of teachers in front of you and thought, you know what, none of these people kind of look like me, come from the same backgrounds as me, or not? I mean, was there an impact there?
100%, like more than 100%. Like throughout my whole schooling career, I didn't have a single teacher that was from the global majority. The closest that I had was a matron that wasn't even in my like group. She was looking after another group of students. And as a Black woman, I just gravitated towards her. And she used to braid my hair because I'd have nobody to braid my hair when I was at boarding school. But yeah, 100%. It makes difference. And I think that's becoming an issue as you grow forward. Like Donald say, we represent what we see around us. When students are in school and they don't see a teacher that looks like them, they think, oh, I can't be a teacher. And they grow up in the world thinking that's not an opportunity for them. And then that it never comes to fruition. And so that's where we start looking into things like intersectionality as well, like making the possibility to be a teacher more accessible for people of the global majority when you're looking into universities and whether that pathway is available for them for a number of reasons, whether it is their class, their color, their ethnicity, their race, anything, making sure that that is an available option for them, you see those pathways start to link up, and that's where you start seeing more teachers from the global majority. And so, yes, the work that we're doing is so impactful within the education system, but we need the support of so many other organizations to fight this fight as a whole and see it happening in so many different areas. And bringing in things like policy is so important, so that it's a system wide, so that when you're looking in areas that aren't diverse, somebody is going into that area feeling safe and feeling like, I can be a teacher in this neighborhood and I won't go through the struggles of racism, and they'll feel supported as a teacher. Because, I mean, not only the students go through racism, the teachers go through it too. And I remember one of the teaching assistants at my school coming and thinking, wow, like, she grew up in the area too, and thinking, wow, it hasn't changed. And that is so heartbreaking, that having an area that it's a village that was entirely run by the school, and seeing that the students that go through it hadn't made a change in that perspective was such an interesting point of view for me. And I was thinking, am I the first person that's thought this? Surely not. But yeah, I think making the opportunity more accessible is the way forward. And I'm sure that you can see that yourself.
I'm very aware that we're rapidly running out of time on this connection. So yes. Just so I don't lose the opportunity, because I know, Donald, you're the one that's got the homework slots ready for us. There's something interesting, something to try. We'll loop back to the kind of the contact details and the how to get in touch after this, just in case we've lost you from the line by the time we get there. But I know that you've got something interesting and something to try, entirely question-based. So I'm just going to let you do this in the way that you want to do it, because I thought all those questions that you've got ready for us are all really interesting.
No, look, first of all, thank you for giving us the opportunity. And you know, like I said earlier, to every teacher that listens to this, or to anyone that listens to this, you know, it's better for you to get it wrong than not start again, because then not try, right? It's better that you get it wrong than not start or not try to start, because at the other end of all of this, there are some real human lives who are impacted by how racism rears its ugly head each time. So, you know, to anyone that's listening, I hope that you at least try, get in touch with us, and we can help you. Now, something to try, entirely question based, you're right. So, and I had a really hard long think, and for me was, I want each person to ask themselves these three questions, and then I'll give you another something to try after. Is, and question your workplace, your curriculum, what you're doing in that particular moment is, who is represented in what you're doing? Who are the people that you're representing? And is it inclusive of everyone? Who is missing? That's the second question. And as a third one, who gets to tell the story? Who are the people who get to tell the story? In the small shifts that we can make, we can move the dial from awareness to action. And that is the key thing that we have to try and do. And I think the last something to try for me, as I was saying to Tom earlier, is whenever you go to networking events, the question, the kind of bingo card question is, what do you do, right? And I've kind of reversed that on its head a little bit to be a bit more in depth in how we kind of really try and include people and look at, who do we connect with the most? And I always ask this one question that inevitably goes on in a conversation for hours, is, what are your three core values? I've stopped asking people, what do you do? And I ask them, what are your three core values? For me, my three core values, integrity, authenticity, and transparency. For me, right? And, you know, I don't know if you want to answer it, Tom, but I would love to know what your three core values are.
Well, I can see I've got about 90 seconds before you fall off the line. I think my core values are...
I'm interested to hear
this. Oof, you put me on the spot. I think probably my core values are the need to sort of pass the love of my subject onto young people so they'll love it too. I think they're the values that I want young people to feel that they have achieved things rather than that I've sort of done things to them. I think these are quite teachery values, aren't they? Perhaps being a bit narrow. I want them to feel they've achieved rather than kind of go out of school going, oh, my teacher, he was so amazing. He did all this for me. I want them to go out saying, I did all this. I achieved all of this. And I think probably going back to the point that you made earlier, Donald, I think I would be very sad if my pupils didn't feel that they were in a space where they could achieve based on their merit rather than who they are. So I think a sort of equitable place. But yeah, those are maybe teachery values rather than my own. But I hope that's on the hoof, a good answer.
No, it is. And I think, you know, they're worth having, and they're definitely very, very good values. And I think in the context of what we're speaking about, it's definitely, you know, put in, and I can imagine, and we speak to a lot of educators, a lot of teachers, a lot of pupils, and the one thing that a lot of pupils always want is their teacher to understand them, right? Everyone wants to be understood. Right. And in understanding in an equitable way and in arming ourselves with the tools to be able to do that, we create a better society. And I don't want anyone to think, you know, like I said earlier on, from ripples to waves, right? Any change that we can make on one person will impact. We don't know the impact that will have, right? A wave that you see in Brazil, look off the coast of Rio somewhere, has been created maybe down in off the coast of Swansea. Who knows? Right. So that for me is my parting kind of, you know, message is get in touch with VFF and we will, you know, it's not about doing the one-off workshops. Learning is a lifetime and educating ourselves is a lifetime.
Well, we're out of time. I know you've got somewhere else you need to be. We could have carried on talking about this probably for another good hour, but it's been a fantastic episode. Thank you both. Everyfuturefoundation.co.uk is the web address, and we will put that link in the show notes. But for now, Sarah Gatwood and Donald Butcher, I'm very grateful to you for joining me on the podcast today. Thank you for listening, and we will be back with you in 2 weeks' time. You've been listening to Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, a podcast about all things education, presented by me, Tom Brees. The special guests this episode were Donald Butcher and Sarah Gatwood from Every Future Foundation. Thanks to them for joining us down the line. Podcast artwork is by Beth Blandford and the music is by Cameron Stewart. Technical support from Peter Lamburn and the studio manager is Adrian Rapps. We're on various social media at Talk Teaching Pod if you want to come and say hello. We'll be back in a fortnight with something else interesting. Until then, take care and enjoy teaching.